staff presentation.
Hey, I'm ready to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to talk about how we are addressing some of the issues we just heard about in a programmatic fashion. So again, my name is Angela Schroeder. I am a senior engineering geologist managing the agricultural regulatory program as well as basin planning. Are aligning the ag program with a vision. And just in case you haven't sort of been aware of some of the evolution of the ag program, in just 3 months ago in March, I was asked to manage the current ag program implementation, and Allison Jones is managing the ag panel and the update of the ag board. So I am part of the ag team and very happy to work with Allison. So basically, when I joined the ag team, I'm not going to project, I'd like this to be more conversation and dialogue, so feel free to interrupt and ask questions. I wanted to go through the process of vision alignment pretty much from the ground up and take a full perspective on what we were doing in the ag program and how we could align it better with our vision. And I had some three really basic objectives. And they're here shown on the second slide. And basically, I wanted to build on the lessons learned from the existing ag program that had been in implementation for about 5 years. And after building on those lessons learned, focus the program efforts on achieving water quality improvement in the severely impaired areas of our region, and being able to demonstrate that change. So it was really to sort of focus on our priority issues. My other third objective was to directly connect individual staff to tangible priority actions. So would it be helpful? I mean, I see people looking at the, waiting for something to appear here. Would you prefer that I project? No? Okay.
We're just used to looking
at it. I'm used to presenting, so it's...
That's great. Lisa, hold the paper.
It's loaded there, so we can do that. I'm perfectly comfortable to do it both ways. So here in this box below, basically, it sort of describes what the process that I went through with staff and other members of the office. So I wanted to bring the ag program into the context of healthy watersheds by going through so real grassroots, prioritizing issues, defining goals, prioritizing our actions, and then identifying operational measures. And as I mentioned, I wanted to do this with staff. I wanted to do it with the vision teams, all three of them, the Clean Groundwater team, Healthy Aquatic Habitat team, and the Sustainable Land Management vision team, as well as other programs. So I wanted to bring TMDLs, stormwater, and other programs that relate to us into the fold. So on page 3, I'll take you through that first step. And this was basically to work with staff and the other program folks and vision teams to prioritize our issues. And because the program had been implementing for a while, we had a lot to work with. We examined the info and lessons learned from prior efforts to identify what the highest priority issues were. And we sat in a room and did that over a couple days and ended up, I think, with 6 or 7 sheets of paper of priority issues. We prioritized them and sort of boiled them down to the 6 here shown on page 3, or slide 3. So pollutants in agricultural tailwater, nitrate.
What is tailwater?
Thank you for asking. Tailwater is agricultural runoff, basically, from irrigation water. So pollutants in agricultural tailwater, nitrates in groundwater from fertilizer, as you just heard about, surface water toxicity that Michael reminded us that we heard about before from pesticides, lack of aquatic habitat, surface water nutrients from fertilizer, and sediment discharge. So of all the issues that we identified over the course of those few days, those were the 6 that were on top of our list, and actually they're prioritized here as well. So staff, as well as other programs not in the ag program, felt that pollutants in ag tailwater and the nitrates in groundwater were our top two issues related to agricultural water quality. And the first one, pollutants...
Sorry for being new, but the sediment discharge, could you just briefly tell me what you mean by that? Where?
Someone else might be able to describe this better, but basically erosion that occurs on farm. So tailwater picking up that sediment and carrying...
Like the stream bed or something?
Right. And let me describe to you also a little bit more detail about number one here, pollutants in ag tailwater. The reason why that came up as the top was because we felt that really captured all of them. So there's nitrate in tailwater, for example. There's pesticides in tailwater, for example. The sediment usually is also in tailwater. So these were our prioritization of the top issues affecting ag water quality. And of course, setting our goals around that was actually fairly easy. We want to reduce polluted tailwater. We want to reduce nitrates, reduce toxicity. So those were our sort of general goals related to those priority issues. Our next step was to spend some time prioritizing the actions. So looking again at these priority issues and goals, what actions, what are the highest priority actions that we could take that would address these issues? And those are what you see here on slide four. Agricultural sustainability from a proactive standpoint, if growers were certified sustainable or otherwise doing sustainable practices, that would help us address all these issues. And it would also be a very positive thing. Tailwater elimination was actually identified as a very high priority. Tailwater treatment. Number four is irrigation efficiency practice implementation, nutrient management practice implementation, pesticide risk reduction, and aquatic habitat protection. And if you go to page 10 of the staff report, you'll see the measures. Our next step was actually to create specific measures that related to these actions. And so this is sort of where we're getting in more detail. So for example, ag sustainability, a measure could be numbers of acres certified sustainable. So the Central Coast Vineyard team has a sustainable practice certification for vineyards. And a good measure of our water quality improvement would be an increasing number of growers certified sustainable. We could also, for example, look at organic. We also chose as one of our most important measures tailwater elimination. And that measure is actually looking at the volume of tailwater produced by a watershed.
Are you looking at slide 5?
I'm actually pointing to now page 10 of the staff report. So again, the process was to identify the issues, define goals around those issues, identify the highest priority actions, and now we're down to developing specific measures. How do we measure our effectiveness related to these particular actions that address our highest priority issues? And again, we did this with ag program staff based upon data, for example, from the 303D list, from observations from the current program implementation, as well as work that other staff had done in other programs like TMTLs. So I mentioned ag sustainability as a measure, tailwater elimination as a measure, and then, for example, the third measure is tailwater treatment. So for that tailwater that exists, how much of it is being treated to reduce pollutants? The third measure actually has two pieces to it. And the second piece, this measure 3B, actually is our direct action, and that is, for example, a number of regional board requirements in the form of inspections or enforcement actions to implement tailwater treatment practices in areas with high volumes of tailwater or in areas with severe water quality impairment. So we feel that these three, in addition to the others, which are in the staff report, would be the most valuable measures in terms of land use to look at our effectiveness for water quality improvement. What Karen will show you in the next talk is water quality outcome sort of measures. For example, looking at purely at nitrates concentration in groundwater would be a water quality outcome measure. So the idea is for these to be operational measures to identify effectiveness of land uses that eventually get reflected in a longer-term water quality outcome measure. So then the question to our group was, now that we have identified the priority issues, goals, and actions, how do we actually achieve the water quality improvement? So what we decided to do, in going to page 5, is to implement, to modify the program slightly to implement based upon a watershed implementation strategy.
You mean slide 5?
I'm sorry. Slide 5. So again, trying to tie our identification of issues, goals, and actions, and then the operational measures, to actual water quality improvement on the ground, and trying to make that connection. And so we chose to do a watershed implementation strategy. The idea is that specific staff, individual staff, are assigned to our highest priority watersheds. Based upon the 303D data, those watersheds are the Salinas, Santa Maria, and Pajaro. Their basic, in the most general sense, their assignment is to achieve and demonstrate tangible agricultural water quality improvement in a specific watershed. That's their responsibility. So it is their responsibility to develop a strategy based upon what we already know of the issues, the goals, and the actions, to develop a watershed-specific strategy that for the purposes of achieving actual water quality improvement. So, for example, in Santa Maria, what are the highest issues? We've already done it as a region. We know what that is. It might be, for example, that nutrients, maybe, and toxicity might be, without talking to that person, might be the highest priority. And so it is up to them to develop a plan of attack, basically, for that specific watershed that will achieve our desired water quality outcomes. In that example, in the Santa Maria watershed.
Is that then going to result in differences in the ag waiver permits that are going to be issued to growers and irrigated lands?
This has, what I'm presenting to you today has to do with program implementation.
Right.
And isn't, and we can do this underneath the current agricultural order, so it doesn't reflect any changes that you might see in the ag order renewal. But it might. It's just a separate but related path. Does that answer your question? Or maybe Allison, maybe you want to answer that question.
I think two things. One, the current conditional waiver is region-wide, so it's not an issue to individuals.
Right.
The future one could be more watershed. Could have some watershed-specific requirements. We haven't worked that out yet. So there's possibilities. We certainly take this, look at this as part of the renewal process.
And my question was only whether you were currently contemplating doing that with the reissuance of the aquifer.
Not specifically.
Sounds like no, you're not specifically thinking of doing any changes of the watershed based.
No, we're looking more at a tiered approach to based on either threats to water quality, specific grower actions. So we might have differential requirements, a differential reporting, but not necessarily by watershed.
Okay.
Question, didn't want to hear that.
Yes.
It sounded like you selected a subset of basins to focus on, and within those basins, you've got a range of priorities you're going to tackle. And there might be some choice in terms of which you prioritize above each other. And I thought you mentioned you're going to get some community input on that to help prioritize what folks in their region might consider a higher priority than another. Do you have a way to address that or get community involvement and input on that?
Well, not having seen what staff is developing yet for each individual watershed implementation strategy, I imagine that there will be some aspects of coordination with stakeholders in a particular watershed. The strategy that we are developing, that water board staff are developing, focuses on water board actions. And so the idea is for us to identify and prioritize our own actions and how we can facilitate the highest level of water quality improvement in a watershed. The strategy would take into consideration the roles of external agencies such as the sanctuary, aqua, resource conservation districts. However, the actions within a strategy would not be overly reliant on external agencies. It's really to identify what staff are doing. But there will be elements as part of that strategy that interacts with stakeholders in a specific watershed. The strategy is supposed to be, the concept is that it's comprehensive. So it looks at surface water, it looks at groundwater, it looks at the specific land use that's occurring, it looks at the beneficial uses. For example, if there's a high density of domestic wells in a particular watershed, that would lend itself to a specific element of the strategy. So the idea, though, is to develop a very systematic approach built with cross-program coordination, focused on our priorities and watershed goals, and identify our highest priority actions within the water board. And then the watershed strategy would also have its own measures, operational measures, that likely relate. So I put this arrow because this last bullet here, the watershed operational measures should be directly relatable to our programmatic operational measures and should hopefully inform them, but would likely be a more specific subset of those. So that is basically a description of the watershed implementation strategy. It's how we hope to go from the identification of our regional issues, goals, and actions and bring them down to the watershed scale to achieve some real water quality improvement. As I mentioned,
This might not be the time to just kind of throw it out there to see if it fits somewhere. I'm kind of getting caught up on several discussion items today about looking at, you know, one, getting community input, but also what's the cause of some of these impacts that you're measuring, and then looking at, you know, how we might try to achieve that in the future. It seems to me that land use is a key issue in terms of what may have caused some pollution in the past and how that might change in the future. It seems like jurisdictions, cities, county, has an impact on that. I mean, one issue is folks talk about preserving ag land, but it turns out ag, particular areas, ag applications, has some impacts that housing doesn't. Then your input on that is going to be a significant decision point for how jurisdictions maybe make a decision in terms of the environmental impact, for example. So, you know, I'm thinking that's why you're getting community input. Of, you know, you might be looking at a particular area and there's some sources of pollution, but maybe a particular area has a vision of changing land use in the future. Maybe they want to orient more towards tourism than agriculture or residential versus this or that. And so it might make a difference on terms of future impacts, and it might factor into an environmental impact report. So that's kind of why I'm thinking having some input from jurisdictions of what you discover in terms of prioritizing what might be done in the future, because land use decisions could impact, you know, the future rates, but also might even eliminate some sources. So that's kind of what I'm thinking needs to be some partnership in there with jurisdictions. So I'll just throw that out, and maybe there's a way to think that through later, how you think these things through.
That's a good point. And it's an excellent point. I'm writing that down as a note here. We have absolutely identified anticipating future challenges and opportunities as part of the strategy. And one example of that is in addition to these highest priority watersheds, we also have specific staff assigned to areas that don't fall into these high priority watersheds, and actually include an element of focusing on valuable resources that are not currently impaired, and how to anticipate challenges and opportunities in those particular watersheds, and maybe go from a more protective versus reactive perspective. But I'll definitely take your input on interacting early with the community to address some of that. As I mentioned, I joined the Ag team in March, and so we have just are in the very early stages of evolving this watershed implementation strategy. I have outlined some of the key tasks and time frame for doing that below here. Right now, staff is in task number one, which is basically a reconnaissance, and they are doing some of what you've described in terms of working with getting input from stakeholders to identify land use issues, characterize at least the ag land use in more detail, looking at water quality. This task one, though, I want to point out is if you're familiar with TMDLs and the level of data assessment that goes on in that program, this is not intended to be that type of assessment. That type of assessment is in the TMDL, I'm looking for Chris, TMDL program. So this is purely what you need to do at a reconnaissance level to identify the highest priorities in terms of the water quality issues. And then we'll go on to finalizing a watershed implementation strategy and do that in close coordination with other programs, such as TMDLs and our monitoring programs, as well as the vision teams. From then on, we'll do examine the strategy to do a resource assessment and allocation to make sure we can actually implement it fully. We might have to identify relatively lower priority tasks that must be deleted or delayed. Our next step would be to actually look at the monitoring, verification monitoring that might be required with such a strategy, and how we manage the data. So we want to specifically do a monitoring program alignment as well as a data management program alignment to make sure that we are capable of tracking the operational measures effectively, so that we can demonstrate change over time. Getting down to task six and or seven and eight here, I mentioned this concept called the state of the watershed summary, and basically what the idea is here is it's an ag-focused state of the watershed summary, and this is where we track our operational measures over time and sort of hold that up as a report card. It becomes our dashboard, basically, so the public, agencies, whoever in a particular watershed or even here can see the elements of the ag program and our measures and how those are evolving over time. It also will help us coordinate with other programs. So this is sort of, since March, what we have been evolving. Staff, again, are in this first task, and our goal is to launch the watershed implementation strategies before the end of this calendar year. Is there any questions about that, the watershed implementation strategy? Next, I want to focus sort of on nutrients in particular. But those are our efforts, at least within the ag program, to align specifically with the vision in a way that achieves tangible results in water quality.
When you look at these tasks, they all have an end date, you know, within this year. What is going to continue? What are going to be the other tasks that are repeated over time that would come up in the future quarterly?
This the task that you see here, this list of tasks, is solely to develop the strategy.
Right.
And then we launch the strategy, and that strategy itself has a time frame, actions that will go on for over a period of time.
Okay.
I'm assuming years.
You're just giving us the first phase.
This is just the implementation of the strategy. This is just developing our approach to a particular watershed.
Thank you.
Another question, Jeff?
Yeah, some of the Lisa asked the question, or asked that I give you some examples of what the implementation tasks might be. So if, for example, in the Santa Maria area, we identify nutrients and toxicity as the highest level issues of concern, and then we go to our operational measures and pesticide risk reduction, as well as nutrient management, are our key measures. So those are what's going to show us that we're making progress in that particular watershed. So we might, the first steps probably include something, the strategy probably includes something like going to severe impaired areas of watershed and making sure there's total clarity about the requirements of the EIA order. There's no ambiguity about what it is that you can or cannot do in terms of discharging to water bodies. And then it might be things like identifying priority areas, identifying maybe priority ranches, make monitoring volumes of tailwater, for example. It might be requiring various nutrient management strategies in particular parts of the watershed. So it's a very focused approach that's supposed to be, the idea is for it to be driven by priority issues in that particular watershed. And those things happen over time. I imagine also that we will revisit the strategy. The strategy is not going to be set in stone. We're going to have to evolve and adapt that as we move forward.
Do you have the tasks yet developed for the strategy?
That's what staff are doing right now. So right now they're in that task one, which is just reconnaissance. As I mentioned, we didn't even start thinking about this until March.
How do you guys have time to do all this? I mean, because... And that's kind of what Russ was really talking about before when he asked about resources, because, you know, with the state budget and everything, you know, it's really being whacked down.
I guess my response to that is exactly why we're doing this, is because we have to prioritize ourselves on the highest priority issues. And so this is using, as Michael mentioned, the Ag program as a tool to get tangible water quality improvement relative to our highest priorities.
This is our job.
Well, we know this is the job, but you're going to be not doing things you've been doing in the past, and you're going to be doing different. You're going to be doing things differently. Is that what it is? You're going to be using your same time differently, in a more efficient way.
Something I wanted to add is many of the tasks that staff come up with for the implementation strategy are not necessarily going to be brand new or different tasks than the staff that has been implementing our ag program under the current order doing. They will just be viewing them and tracking them and focusing and prioritizing them differently as a result of looking at their assignments on a watershed basis and with a watershed focus, barring any shifts because of that focus telling us that something we've been doing might not be the most effective. So you are unlikely to see radically a whole suite of brand new different tasks that we haven't thought of, or that some technical assistance provider or the growers themselves haven't already discovered or created implementation.
I'm going to ask Angela's response, because it tells me that you are being very realistic about the likelihood that there will be less support for resources, and that you will have a confident projection of where you will be able to implement what you have, what staff you have, what time you have, and the regulatory enforcement component of this, that is also, it appears to me, that it's also linked in a much more coordinated fashion, so that they're reporting annual accomplishments, quarterly accomplishments. You actually are showing the integration of these things. So it's not just darts on the board. You know, well, we did this many enforcement actions, but what does that have to do with this? I think the map now is going to be very clear. And I'm frankly impressed with this effort to do this holistic. Everybody talks about holistic, and everybody thinks about ecosystem-based management, but actually implementing it is incredibly challenging and difficult, even as smart as we all are with all our technical support. So I feel actually much better about, even as we think that there could be another 20% cutback coming out of the governor's office, there could be a number of things occur, hopefully short-term, but they're going to occur. So I feel like that this agency is probably going to do very well in spite of it, and that's a very good thing.
Let me share a concern and a counterpoint to some degree. I think you're being very efficient, effective within, let's call it, our silo. And there are multiple silos throughout the state of organizations working on different priorities, even within the environmental area. And my concern is everyone is experiencing a reduction in resources. There's going to be some, there is always an opportunity cost. If you put your resources here, you're not putting them over here. We just heard from Michael, well, we can do this because we're going to put all of our resources over here. Well, no, we're not, because we're doing this too. You know, we are going to make some forced choices, but we're also going to be making statewide forced choices. And if you really want to look at an economic environmental system, they all have an interaction. So if we focus on your ultimate goals, which are one thing, and you are working on how to implement a subset of those goals, and let's just say environmental goals, there are various partners that are also in place that are going to help implement these. So let's say cities working on stormwater basin plans or whatever. As their priorities and resources change and funding shifts to what they can prioritize and work on, if this organization is out of sync with other organizations that also have some impacts, you may be working really hard and efficient in one subset of what we're working on in the state, and it's not really as efficient as we could be for the environment, let alone the economy overall. So that's kind of why I think back to partnering, though even though we want to be as efficient as we can within our silo or our subset of this, call it an economic ecosystem, you know, we need to partner with, well, what are those strategic opportunities other organizations have, so that even if we're doing something that's not the most efficient in our world, the overall impact is best for watersheds, if you want to think of it like that, because of what other organizations could do. So I'm a little, that's my only caution and concern, is while you're being efficient with the resources we have, the ultimate impact on the environment is how efficient everyone can be with what they can do.
That's an important point, and by design, we are considering the efforts and partnership with agencies that are not, you know, external to us. However, we are also making sure that our strategies are not overly reliant on those actions, just because we can only control what we can do ourselves.
Right.
So we're trying to balance that.
I think it's important to realize, too, that one of the unintended consequences is that every action will have an impact in some parallel worlds. Because I'm just thinking of, you know, from a planning commission, city council perspective, we all do environmental impacts and, you know, impact reports related to, let's say, a building project. And, you know, some of the inputs is that cost-benefit analysis. And if you basically show additional costs, let's say, which I'm a believer in economics in terms of you only allocate resources effectively if you show all costs associated with any particular action, you have failure costs, then it's a good project. What you're identifying is additional costs that have been in place but they've never been identified before. You know, if you're creating additional groundwater contamination because of agriculture, then that's cost that's been shifted to other people. As you identify that cost with a particular land use activity, you've now made that less valuable. And when you're considering land use issues, you may say, well, you know, eliminating agricultural use in a particular land area may be a better decision, and that's a better place for housing because you just changed the cost mix. So that has a, you know, your process has a big impact on other people's decisions, and I think just keeping that in mind and how that interaction is, you know, will have some impact. And I'll stop.
That's an interesting way to look at all of this.
Yeah. Well, I've been stimulated with a lot of what I've heard today of just how that actually will impact the surrounding world, and that's why you end up with some political. You may have new friends and new foes as a result of just the analysis.
Is there any other questions about the watershed implementation strategy? So, this next series of slides, basically, I just wanted to sort of walk you through some focus on nitrate. And this is a good follow to Dean's talk about Morro Bay and Salinas. And the interesting thing I wanted to point out about Morro Bay, to echo what Roger has already said, is that that is an interesting challenge, but also an opportunity, because the hydrogeology of that particular watershed is such that we might see some improvement pretty quickly, because it's shallow, it's constrained by bedrock, it's fairly well characterized. So if we can adopt some land use change potentially there, some maybe some improved practices, we could see the waterfall improvement from that, maybe in our lifetime. And what I'm going to describe here is maybe some of those practices and how we might go about implementing them. So I wanted to remind you of the 2006 management checklist that Allison and the ag staff completed. Allison, please will jump in if I haven't characterized this correctly. But they sent out these surveys to all the growers who were enrolled. And of this, about 1,800 growers enrolled, they got just over 1,000 back. And the survey addressed pesticides, irrigation water, erosion, sediment control, and nutrient management. These four areas are the key critical areas of the farm plan. The nutrient management survey questions addressed nutrient budgeting, plant tissue analysis, residual nitrogen, fertigation well controls, fertilizer application, proper training, and fertilizer handling. And this was in 2006. So it's interesting, actually, to note that we are talking about these same things today. And so, as Lisa mentioned, it's not these ideas for improved practices are not new. The results of the survey were interesting in that there's a big range in terms of how these practices are being implemented. So for the nutrient management practices, somewhere between 40 to 75% of responding growers implement some of these practices, between 2 and 16% plan to implement some of these practices, and up to 23% do not plan to implement any of these practices. Well, it's because there's a number of different practices. So I didn't want to take up the time to describe all eight different practices and say 2% are going to do this for each. So there's a big wide range, and the nutrient management survey questions, I believe, were identified at sort of the key practices. So theoretically, adopting all of them would be important. So I thought that the range was still useful. It's all well documented on the web.
Did this survey also have, it says here in the second bullet, address pesticide, irrigation, water, erosion, sediment control. Was there a separate component of the survey called nutrient management?
Yes,
survey,
and that's what I'm describing here. Yeah.
Okay, that was clear. So what's the other part of the survey?
It's just basically sections of the survey. So there's a pesticide management section, there's an irrigation water management section.
Okay.
And so what I'm reporting to you here is just those that focus on nutrients.
Just for clarification, if you recall, the original requirements were that growers would develop farm plans
right.
that had those four components
yeah.
in them.
Yeah.
And then they would report periodically to the water board. So this was a required reporting. And we actually had a higher response than that, but we had a cutoff date to develop the report, so that's why it doesn't have quite that. You don't have 100%. We didn't get 100%, of course, response, but we had better than this. But then we identified practices in each category that then they reported on. All of them aren't relevant to all farms, mm-hmm. so there wouldn't be necessarily that any one farm would have implement 100% of the practices, but we had a section where they could say not applicable.
So that's a different result than do not implement.
It is actually separate.
It's separate. Yeah.
So there are, we did learn a lot from the survey, I believe, in talking to staff, and there are some limitations. For example, definitions are really important. If you say nutrient budgeting and, you know, someone hears it in a completely different way, and so how you respond to the survey is going to be unique to your own understanding. So we are going to look at some of the limitations of the survey, and we are going to update, as part of our watershed implementation strategy, how we track those practices and how we verify their implementation. But basically what I wanted to show you from the checklist is just that the data indicates continuing impairment based upon the 303D list and other reports, and the survey indicates that there is definitely room for some improvement in terms of the level of implementation of some of these practices. So if you go to the next slide, number 8, I wanted to show, to highlight those operational measures that will directly address nutrients. And those are tailwater elimination, tailwater treatment, irrigation efficiency, and nutrient management. So those go to reducing the source as well as reducing the means of transport in terms of tailwater. So the way we're going to, I anticipate that we will apply this to the watershed implementation strategy is doing things like focused outreach in areas where there's significant nitrate impairment, coordinating with the private industry. We've learned that the fertilizer sales folks, PCAs who also do pesticides, are key. It's important that they be informed of not only the water quality impairment, but also the requirements of the ag order. Focused inspections in areas where there's ground and surface water impairment, verification monitoring, as I mentioned, potentially requiring certain nutrient management strategies. We are also looking at requiring fertigation controls on groundwater wells, and this is where fertigation is where it's like chemigation. Chemigation is with pesticides. It's where you apply fertilizers via your irrigation water. So typically they have a tank hooked up to their well. And the importance of the well control is so you have a backflow or check valve so you don't get fertilizer back down the well, which is a direct conduit to groundwater. It's an easy way to avoid groundwater contamination. It's not required in general, and so we're looking at potentially, in certain cases, potentially requiring fertigation controls. And then also incorporating progressive enforcement where necessary. So again, as Lisa mentioned, these are things that we do already. It's not different, really. The idea, though, is to apply it on a watershed approach in a very specific and focused way that is based upon the priority issues of that particular watershed.
Out of curiosity, after seeing these results on the survey, that includes all of the categories,
the results, no, the results are only for the nutrient management area. I didn't report, okay. I didn't summarize all the rest of them.
Okay. So have we seen any improvement in nitrate levels in the ag waiver program since we've been requiring or recommending or encouraging the implementation of some of these practices?
Do you want me to answer that as far as the monitoring?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead. Not yet. We actually haven't done. The cooperative monitoring program is doing a final report for their first few years, and they haven't done a trend analysis yet, so we don't know. One of the problems that we ran into is when we first, in terms of just tracking practice changes, is our enrollment database that was online. We put everything into it and was not supported later on, and so we had to convert everything over and we lost some of our data, so we didn't transfer very well. So we don't have a real good baseline. This is our best baseline right now. The 2006 report is probably our best baseline in terms of practice.
So,
Lily,
please stand up, please.
Sure.
No, because we've got a range of 40 to 75%, so 75% looks like a pretty good change in something. I'm not quite sure what it is, but you know, I think it might be good to know whether there's any correlative change in improvement of water quality.
One thing we wanted to do, we talked about, Angela and I talked about doing, is a having the checklist again, requiring another report this year, so we can compare it to the 2 years ago, see if there are any changes.
I think you're right, Joe. We have to have empirical data to know whether we're actually making a difference. Survey would tell us. If you ask carpenters whether they're doing a good job building houses, they'll probably say yes, they are. We have to actually measure it somehow.
Do we have the data that just hasn't been worked out? We have the data to answer the question.
We have some data.
Okay.
Five years.
Right, I understand that. So,
right.
Because we're going to be, you know, probably going back to these like ag waiver permit, starting to require more things. And I'm just wondering whether the current level of implementation is sufficient. Just extended over another 5 year period.
Well, we definitely have identified areas where there needs to be more implementation. Like when you look, when you drill down into the survey, into the checklist reporting, you can see that there are some practices that aren't used very much, like irrigation efficiency was kind of low, the nutrient budgeting was low, irrigation tracking. So there's definitely some key practices that could be used a lot more.
And the operational measures that we chose were based upon examining a breadth of observations and data. So we chose 5 nutrient practice implementation for a reason. It was because it was necessary to increase the level of implementation of those practices.
And in a general sense, we don't think the information the way we collected it in the first round is adequate to answer the questions that we're asking, which is why we want
to. And just one other thing to think about, just results of inspections. I would say there's a pretty big range. Most inspections come up with something that can be improved. When we go out to farms, we're seeing things that need to be improved. So, you know, obviously we can't inspect 2,500 operations or 1,700 operations. So just based on what we've seen so far, it's pretty fair to say that there's definitely room for improvement.
And Jeff, yeah, the question of is there a water quality improvement reduction we should be discharged. We're dealing with that in the renewal of the order. We're asking that question. What additional information do we collect and require in order to answer that question, both at a watershed scale basis and on an individual basis?
Well, another concern I have, again, more global policy level, of not only do you have the better accounting of costs that might shift land use from ag, because I'm assuming intensive ag use is within an urban area, it's more likely to have an impact on water that is used for domestic use than a distant agricultural. So it kind of shifts land use policy to maybe away from ag uses to residential, for example, if you're looking at costs. But having formerly been the chair of our local air pollution control district board, there's also a substitute goods issue in economics where it may be, as you add costs, rightly so in the era of agriculture, it's making it cost prohibitive, but it shifts maybe production outside of the state, even outside of the country. And looking at the air pollution control district monitoring stations around and the changes in truck patterns as you truck in agriculture or other things, you know, as part of the statewide environmental report card, you may actually, it's going to be interesting to see, well, by having an impact here, it does have an impact somewhere else. And so what is the change in water quality versus the change in air quality, for example? And I don't know if you, the state probably looks at those report card issues. I know at the county level they do, but is that something that's water boards are considering it as you change policy local and you basically you're shifting costs back to the appropriate source, which in turn shifts economic decisions that may essentially move costs somewhere else. So it may increase costs in transportation for ag, which might have a
environmental impacts as well. And at some point at the state level, folks are going to make a decision, economic impact, shipping ag, and maybe other environmental issues. So I don't know if folks have kind of, you consider that outside of your silo to be concerned with this kind of problem. We don't do analysis like that, global analysis like that. We have done big comparisons like that, different cases or different scenarios that we have looked, you know, beyond the action that we're doing for external impacts. But the kind of analysis you're talking about is not that.
Does it work look at it at all?
From my experience, no.
Air resources control, save our resources control, EPA, Cali,
the EPA has had a little thought in the area.
I don't think we're in a situation where we're talking about shipping agriculture out of the region, because one of the things that is borne out by the survey, by inspection results, is that there's a whole lot of room for improvement in existing practices. And Angela mentioned sustainable agriculture, and that's really what we're looking for. It's not a matter of driving agriculture out of the region to someplace else. That happened with dairies. But how can agriculture operate in a sustainable way that's actually protecting water quality and still being productive, we hope.
I think what Tom is getting at is that there may be unintended consequences of implementing X,
right.
And here Y and Z are going to start to go up and
right.
Environmental impact, and he's questioning, is that within our ambit to at least consider and be aware of?
Yeah, my sense is that we're really down here in terms of, there's a lot of headroom within existing operations. We're making significant improvements before we're talking about getting to those more critical questions.
We're at 1 o'clock, so how much more?
I'm actually done.
You are done? Okay.
On the economic issue, I can just add that to the extent you have to comply with CEQA, there is some analysis of economic impacts because you have to evaluate reasonably foreseeable means of compliance and the costs associated with but it's not as broad range as you're talking about, but to some degree there's some consideration of bigger than just water quality.
Yeah.
Well, that is something that's discussed, and we have the Ag Advisory Panel, which has ag and environmental representatives when we developed the first one and now. That does come up as part of the equation. Part of the conversation is just resources and how to balance that. So we do talk about it.
Staff presented some questions to us on page 15 of the staff report. This is for us board members to kind of look at and consider. Monica. On page 15 of the staff report, staff posed questions to us board members.
Yes.
And if any of us have any feedback to staff, maybe they would like it.
I have
a question. Okay. I thought you might. I read through these things also, and I don't know how.